This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 7:47. We've got the Breakfast Grill coming up shortly. And Ibrahim will be speaking to Stephen Tiru, president of the Malaysian Bar. Lots of things to discuss, including the proposed amendments to the Legal Profession Act by Putrajaya. Now, these proposed amendments have drawn a lot of flak from members of civil society who say that it will undermine the independence of the Bar Council. And there are those, on the other hand, who say that, well, in fact, the Malaysian Bar was never impartial to begin with. So, you know, sometimes they issue statements that are politically inclined. So what's the story here? Lots to address. Stephen Tiru will be on to talk about some of these concerns.
Well, in a fully functioning democracy, you want as many institutions to have as much check and balance in the system. And some might say in Malaysia, some of those institutions have been eroded. So, to me, I want more, you know, more power to the people, really.
And I also think that the Bar Council, usually when they make a statement, and they have been very vocal as far as I can remember them to be, but they usually comment on matters of the law and interpretation of law, whether the law had been interpreted fairly and correctly or not.
And that should be the way. And anyway, lawyers are quite vocal anyway.
Well, I do want a Malaysian bar that is vocal, and I do want them to be able to comment on issues that they feel need commenting on, legality of certain issues, constitutionality of certain issues. So I would like them to have more power, but let's see what the checks and balances are and what these amendments truly are. We'll find out more with Stephen Tiru, president of the Malaysian Bar. But Bank Negara Governor Datuk Mohamad Ibrahim in the news this morning because he has stressed the importance of an independent and effective internal audit function as a core line of defence and a strong audit committee in business. He's also said that there should be zero tolerance for any cases that involve abuses and corrupt practices.
Yeah, so this is extremely intriguing. It's kind of like a subtle message at a time when Malaysia is being viewed internally as well as externally with, you know, with all kinds of disdain in terms of its treatment of certain cases.
One MBB, like,
just say one MBB. Like,
you know. Let's call a spade a spade.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess Dato' MI is continuing the hardline stance, you know, initiated by Tan Sri Zetty, and talking about how it's the importance of top, you know, setting the right tone from the top.
He is the second man this week to be saying that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Dato' Yusli was saying that as well last week.
Right. And you know what I find interesting about this article is that maybe I have not read it with a fine tooth comb, right? But there's no mention of banks. Basically, he's addressing the Malaysian corporate sector in general, and I guess you know, banks are usually under the purview of Bank Negara, but I guess Bank Negara's role is to ensure the stability of the system, and you need all the help you can get, right?
So when he talks about failure of audit functions, right, I mean, it's a little late to be talking about a failure of an audit function after we've seen you know, what happened with the 1MDB case. But now he's also saying that the audit coverage and scope should not be confined to compliance or risk-based parameters, but it should be holistic, encompassing new risk areas. So not just the usual checks and balances looking at the books, but everything else, taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture.
Basically, he is elevating the status of internal auditors to the Sherlock Holmes of corporation. Auditing isn't such a boring job, right? You're acting like Sherlock.
Well, you've made it quite sexy now. It's Benedict Cumberbatch sexy.
Exactly. Well, no. Well, Angelina Jolie. But you're right. Actually, yeah. Jules is a very prescient observation because the central bank is really the overseer of the financial industry. And for them to not even mention one FSI or one, you know, mention of financial in there is very, very telling.
Yeah, because we have certain commercial... Now I'm going to go the same path of stepping on eggshells here. We have certain institutions or certain companies here that are not financial institutions, but would have a big impact on the economy with the kind of borrowings that they have, right, that can shake the financial system.
I just want to point out one particular view. He put forth four views, and the second of his views says that before an organization seeks to venture into new and high-risk areas of growth, it is imperative for the board and senior management to seek assurance from IA, internal audit, that the risk and control frameworks are adequate and rigorous to identify gaps in the system.
In English?
So basically, before you step out into the big bad world, make sure that your internal controls are tip top and don't allow for leakages, basically.
Okay. And also, I think corporations have become more complex. It's no longer you opening up a shop in a shop lot and selling stuff, right? Today, you're dealing with this global system. You're selling into the world, and therefore, you should seek opinion about your actions from people like the internal auditors.
Yeah, so the internal auditors must be impartial. They must be independent. They must be credible, and they must know what they're doing.
The Edge Financial Daily today has quoted a World Bank economist saying that it is crucial for Malaysia to undertake structural reforms in its services sector. And some of the reforms that this economist is saying, that Rafael Munoz Moreno, the World Bank economist, is saying, there needs to be reform in three areas: GLCs, government-led companies, investments, and SMEs.
So this is kind of like the same thing as well, as uttered by the central bank governor. And I chose the story because they're pretty much sending the same message. Mm-hmm. From the World Bank's perspective, they're saying that the Malaysian services sector does not churn out as much productivity as the national income levels. So basically, it's not doing as well as it should be. And he's also pointing out for reforms in the GLC sector because even though you've got things like the TPP and, and the various liberalisation measures inside there, it's quite diluted because of the significant carve-out policies, which is basically saying it still allows scope for manoeuvring.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that we've moved a very, very long way away from since the dawn of Marxism, when the USSR adopted a kind of centrally planned economy so that they can give rise to the workers. But that didn't work out because governments are not really in a position to sometimes make the best commercial decision.
And they've been caught with their fingers in the cookie jar many times.
Absolutely. And so now I'm wondering whether Malaysia is actually in a kind of centrally planned economy where the government has its hand in everything.
Well, the Minister of Finance.
So are we like the USSR?
We are.
I think the idea now is that, more and more people are concerned about the involvement of government in business, in every sector of business, from the GLICs, the government-linked investment companies, all the way down to GLCs and the presence in the stock market, in the economy, in business in general. So that's been, I know this is a bugbear of yours, Jules, but now the World Bank, you're in good company. But more and more now, people are starting to realize there's a lot of power being focused on the executive in the office of the Ministry of Finance, in the office of the Minister of Finance.
Well, basically, there is no one industry or sector in Malaysia that you can get involved in without coming up head-to-head in competition with the government. And although we in the media have been talking about this for a long time, the private sector and the private businessmen, the entrepreneurs, they have been voting with their feet for many, many years. They don't necessarily invest in the country anymore. They, under the guise of regionalization or under the guise of international expansion, they just invest elsewhere. It's as simple as that. Look, money is fluid. Capital is international. It finds a home in the best place where you can get a return.
And that's the cycle then, right? Because there's a gap when money flows out and when people vote with their feet.
Exactly.
Then there's a gap, and what fills in? More government money.
I think we are also not talking about unfettered capitalism, because you really need to provide for the needs of the B40. But what this guy from the World Bank is saying, Rafael Munoz Moreno, he's saying that you should at least put the disconnection of the GLCs on the agenda. At least do that. At least have a kind of statement and policy to say that. I know that Pemandu, or at least Khazanah, had a policy to
divest
a lot of the holdings, but that has still not happened. We're still very much entrenched in the present way where the government has such a big hand in the economy.
Turtles have been known to be faster.
But there is a suspicion about what this guy is saying as well, because he's singing high praises for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and he's saying that an organization like the Investor State Dispute Settlement, the ISDS, is a mechanism for corporations to protect their rights. I'm not sure that we want to give up that kind of sovereignty.
Yeah, exactly, which makes me a little bit suspicious, because who does the World Bank work for?
Well, take it with a pinch of salt,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
So nothing is ever what it seems.
And to make matters worse, neither Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton are now in support of
the DPP. You're right. 7:57 right now. Let's take a look at Ecovest. They've just signed an agreement with four local banks for the issuance of what is described as one of the biggest ringgit-denominated sukuk wakala worth 3.6 billion ringgit. And this sukuk is to partly fund the Setiawangsa Pantai Expressway project.
Yeah, so I look at this story. You know, they get a 53-year concession to build another highway. It's going to cost you...
53 years, that's a lifetime.
53 years and 6 months of concession period with the government, okay? And not only do they get that, it's a 32-kilometre highway, by the way, they also get basically financial assistance to do so.
RIA, okay? It's called RIA. RIA stands for joy, right?
Yeah.
It's You'd be very joyous to get the RIA.
RIA stands for Reimbursement Interest Assistance, RIA, okay.
Correct. So basically, the government supports the concessionaire by footing the interest costs during the construction period. Now, hey, hooray for Henry, whoopee for Noddy, right? You get this concession. You get this concession. You get financial assistance. And then you get to get paid for over the next 53 years. It's fantastic. I would love to get this kind of deal.
What would you do as a government, though? Would you cut off that funding umbilical cord? Because without that funding, that highway would not be even built, let's say.
No, the infrastructure argument is indisputable, but it's basically how it's doled out. And when you look at this, the person behind Ecovest, or at least the person fronting Ecovest, is Tan Sri Lim Kang Hoo, who is also behind this kind of waterfront system.
Heard of this guy.
Who is also behind the consortium that bought major parts of 1MDB's real estate assets in Bandar, Malaysia. So, I don't know.
Lots
well,
of questions.
I think you can try to draw the connections. And obviously, all these, the economies of not only Malaysia, but the world would be ruled by magnets, right? The question is, how do we fund an infrastructure project? Should it be all up to the entrepreneur themselves? Or should there be some kind of partnership between the government
and... talk about the private-public partnership, right? But whether that is, who is it benefiting, and what kind of... is this an equal partnership?
Well, it's a buddy relationship. It's a close nexus between the government and their buddies and the proxies and the nominees, isn't it, really?
Because this is effectively a subsidy. This half a billion ringgit is a subsidy for the people who are living near Setiawangsa and the Pantai Expressway.
Correct.
And it's a subsidy for the corporation as well. But is it a justified subsidy?
Okay, we've got the news bulletin coming up next with The Breakfast Grill after Stephen Thiru, president of the Malaysian Bar on the Grill, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.